Happy New Year, everybody. It's 2018. Unbelievable. 2018. But here we are. It is the Wintrust Business Hour. We're coming to you on 720 WGN at the Allstate Showcase Studio. Looking out of the window, by the way. Kind of quiet. I guess a lot of businesses aren't open, but it's a good day to be listening to the radio. I'm WGN TV's Paul Lisnick, and I'm in for Steve Bertrand today, who gets to enjoy his New Year's Day off. I am the host of Politics Tonight over on CLTV every weeknight at 5:30. And of course, you'll catch me on all the new shows talking politics. We're not doing politics this hour. We're talking about business because that's what we do here. Really interesting show. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to an expert on the financial markets, the upcoming markets. After all, it is 2018. The question is, what should we expect going forward? And so we're going to find out. And that'll be after the 12:30 news break. But now, I want to talk about the travel industry, and I'll tell you what triggered this for me, which is I do a lot of my own bookings online, actually almost all my bookings online, and you know, use all the airline websites and the various combination websites. And then this summer during my travel, I had some snags and some problems. If you heard the crosstalk between John and I just before the noon hour, he said the same thing. He says he does his own travel arrangements until something goes wrong. So it raised the question for me, do we still need independent travel agents, those folks that we used to use 100% of the time? Are they still around? What are they doing? So I brought in one for you, who's probably going to defend the existence of the industry. And why not, even in these changing times? Wendy Marchant is the founder and president of WLM World Travel, works with business clients, leisure clients, personal clients, all that kind of thing. Full disclosure, I've known you, Wendy, for many years. And One of the reasons you were kind enough to come in on New Year's Day, probably because I know you. But again, it raises the question, you know, even I do my own travel, but this summer I had some snags. I called you late at night, and there you were to help me. And by the way, I didn't call you personally. I just called your business line, and there you were ready to answer it. We'll talk about that. But first, do we still need independent travel agents today, or are we good enough by all the websites that are in existence?
Well, my thought, and I think many people in the industry believe that travel agents do provide a very valuable service. Not everybody needs to be using a travel agency. Basically, if you're a one-time-a-year traveler and you're going from Chicago to New York for a round trip to visit grandma and you're only doing it once a year, you probably will go online and book that trip easily, get a good fare, be comfortable with it. Now, that works beautifully as long as nothing goes wrong. So what happens? You arrive in Chicago Airport and the flight is canceled and you're on a very reduced rate airfare and the airline says, too bad. We can't help you. The next flight we can put you on is 3 days down the road. And that has happened many, many times this year. So that's one reason why some people do not use travel agents. They think they can do it better and they think they're not going to have any problems.
Now, it's true that in your industry, we used you a lot because, first of all, you got your fees from the business, right? If I booked on an airline, agents received a percentage of that. So I was never charged a fee before, but then it looks like the airlines wanted you all to go away.
They do want us all to go away. And the only time they really want our help is when they're dealing with a problem such as a weather delay, a technical delay, something goes wrong. And they've got hundreds of people trying to change their flights, trying to rebook, trying to get from A to B. That's when they call in the travel agent and give us total flexibility to rebook the clients, redo this, any class of service, any fare, any routing, other than another airline. They do not like it if we move them over to a secondary airline. But basically, yes, the airlines would like us to go. They're offering so many loyalty programs to travelers now to keep them using a particular carrier. And loyalty both in hotels and airlines is crucial right now.
Well, I live that myself. Yeah. Believe me, I'm a top flyer with certain airlines and certain hotel chains. You know,
The hotels are even they're offering specials to frequent stayers at a lower rate. You can go online and book it at a lower rate and get all of the benefits of having it on your smartphone, checking in on your smartphone, everything you can handle that way.
So one thing I think that's different, I mean, there was a time, I know years ago, you had like many agents, you know, we'd go to your offices there,
right,
in a mall, wherever it was. You don't see those anymore. So the question is, is that a good thing? I imagine at the time that folks like you began to close down those offices and shift operations, it looked like the end was near. It looks like actually things turned out okay.
Well, I think basically, back when the internet really became very popular and people decided to try and book travel through it, a lot of agencies, a lot of small agencies had to close their doors. They couldn't keep up with the industry. They couldn't keep up with technology, and because the airlines were no longer paying us commissions, they had to change their business model. They had to learn to charge fees, and many clients have had a very difficult time in easing themselves into fees. Now, corporate clients have paid fees all along in everything that they do. So you can usually convince a corporate account that they're going to be charged for an airline ticket or a hotel or a car or a change. But leisure agents or leisure clients have a very difficult time in accepting paying a fee to issue an airline ticket. Now, in the industry, basically as far as fees go, airline tickets, generally speaking, agencies will charge a fee. Hotels still pay commissions. Cruises, insurance, cars, they still commission us as agents. So therefore, the smaller agency who's trying to maintain a client base will not charge a fee for booking the hotel and the car and the cruise and the tour. They will still charge a fee for the air, but they're commissioned by the vendor, by the supplier.
So it's obviously, I guess, for people that, you know, don't want the notion of fees. A lot of people, that's again why we go online and do things. As I said sort of up front, and you said this, if I have a smooth trip, I'm probably fine just doing things on my own.
Absolutely.
The problem is I don't have a smooth trip and something goes wrong. I've had the experience. We'll talk about this after the break, but had the experience of, you know, you're trying to get through to an airline. Well, if it's weather, if it's something major, mm-hmm. good luck trying to get through to a rep. But I will say, unless you're a top flyer, if you are that top tier flyer with any airline, you're probably going to have better service than most.
You are. Absolutely. You have a specialized line. They're obviously wanting to keep you happy. They'll do anything to accommodate you. But even as a frequent flyer and having status, I don't know how many times you've tried to call that special phone line that they have made available to you. I know in the last 2 or 3 weeks where we had Atlanta go down as far as power, right. We had weather delays and everything else, I was calling the preferred airline phone number for preferred flyers. I was being told up to 3 hours wait for them to get back to me. So at that point, you're asked to put your phone number in and they'll call you back. I had a call from Delta at 1 o'clock in the morning in order to make a change for a client.
Now, you said you're trying to get through a preferred number.
Right.
But don't you have your own special numbers?
We have special numbers, but if you as a preferred flyer with United and you have a special number that you call when you want to do something, I have that number or I can get that number, let me put it that way. And therefore, I can call on your behalf and do anything that needs to be done.
So where you find yourself, and here's the thing, one time I found myself, you know, in an airport, it's late at night, the line is down the block, you mm-hmm. know, in front of the customer service agents. That's the time that I called you. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. You hadn't issued the ticket. I did my own thing. But I called you on a business line that you had.
Correct.
And you answered it. I guess part of the question is, whereas, as I mentioned earlier, you and many agents had offices, it's become sort of, I believe, a home-based operation for a lot. But I guess that's kind of better for the customer.
Actually, surprisingly enough, Paul, they're saying that of the number of agents that were actually working about 5 to 7 years ago, almost 50% of those agents have gone home-based, either aligned with a host agency, an independent, whatever, but they have got home-based because the overheads to run an office, as you can imagine, are excessive, and you want to keep those overheads down.
But having other agents, of course, people could be in their own homes in their office.
Absolutely.
The way things work today.
Absolutely. The problem is, and my husband will agree with this, it's almost a 24-hour job when you're working from home.
Yeah.
I mean, you're being called regularly. You've got a 24-hour service. If something goes wrong, they contact you. You've got your cell phone now. But, you know, the service levels, I feel, to the client has increased immensely.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little break. We're going to talk more about this and some of the specific problems that occur that people need to get to travel agents about, I think, to keep the industry. We're about keeping industries alive today, right? People want to make sure they're working and that we have need. And welcome back to the Wintrust Business Hour. This is WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick. I'm in for Steve Bertrand today. I can always listen to that Tom Skilling clip, by the way, forever. That eclipse. Tom really is that emotional, by the way, I have to tell you. Working with him every day, I can tell you that. What you see is what you get on the air. What a great, great guy. Well, later in the next half hour, we're going to be talking about looks at the markets for the future. But we're talking about the travel industry right now and whether or not people need independent travel agents. We know that big corporations have in-house people, and we know that most regular folk like me And Ben Cortez did it right, and my producer, Dan Long. We just go online and do our tickets. But Wendy Marchant, the president of WLM World Travel, is here and says, well, that's fine, but not if you have a problem. So, Wendy, I'm guessing that the number one problem, there's these moments that happen. But weather. Rain in the summer, snow in the winter. Sometimes it's just too cold to fly. Is that what triggers a lot of phone calls when people are like, well, so much for what I did online?
I have to think that does impact people's decisions as far as booking online versus with a real person or a travel agent. Just take the last 2 or 3 weeks with the weather on the East Coast and Atlanta Airport going down, the power. You can imagine the holiday season coming in, the numbers of people that were trying to get onto flights and get to destinations made them think twice about the ability that they have to go online, because Delta says if you and I'll use Delta as an example right now, only because it was Atlanta on the East Coast. You called Delta, you got the 800 number, you called your preferred phone number, and you got this number to call. It said, go online, and you'll be able to modify or change anything that needs to be done. I tried that. I went online, and I tried to modify a reservation for a client. I couldn't find any space at all on Delta for that client for 5 days to get where he needed to go. So what I did was I spoke to the client. I said, you'll be able to get a refund on the unused portion of the ticket on Delta. I'm going to book you on another carrier. And I was able to get him out within a few hours. Again, that is something that we provide as a service to clients who are clients of ours.
And that's when things are really, you know, hitting the fan late at night. The situation I had that triggered this desire to do the interview was I was at Washington when the tower service went out.
The tower service went out.
Yeah.
Yes.
And nobody knew. Nobody understood what was happening. And we were probably three and a half hours. We're on the tarmac. We're out there. Nobody's telling us what's going on.
Right.
Eventually we find out. Anyway, it goes from delay, canceled flight, and back to the gate. Well, I walked in and just saw just a huge number of people lined up. I can't deal with this. I'm never going to get through to the airline.
Right.
And so I called you. I know your after hours number. You answered. And you were able to, because by the way, I should say, in fairness to the airline, they did book me, but they booked me 2 days later. Just
right.
The example you're talking about.
Right.
And I called you and you were able to look at a variety of airlines, a variety of options. You got me out the next morning, got me a hotel that night. It was just something, I guess as a business person, I just didn't have the patience to deal with or the resources to do.
Right. Well, basically, when we ask for a display for flight availability, we have every airline that operates that particular route within time frames and days that are available. We can see every class of service that's available. So we can see if you're coming in on a specific carrier and all of their flights are zeroed out because they're dealing with the issue at hand, we can see that another carrier actually has flights, has seats that you can book. And at that case, I can go in, rebook you on another carrier, issue the ticket. You can deal with, or I can if you needed me to. If you were a client who had booked the original with me, I would have dealt with the airline and got your refund back for you or whatever. So, yeah, I think when there's issues like that, I don't know how many times I tell clients, if you are stuck at an airport and you're told to go and get in the line for customer service to make the change or do what you need to do, call me. I will look in the computer, find out what's available. I will confirm a seat, if possible, on the same carrier for you. When you get up to the front of the line, you've got a seat confirmed. You know you're going to get on that flight, and they'll just reissue the ticket for
you. And especially for business people who have to be at a certain place at a certain
time.
Right. You once told me this story. I love this. Back during that volcano eruption in 2011, it was in Iceland. Now, what does it have to do with the United States, right? But it was in Iceland. You had a client who was stuck. I love this story because of the resolution you came up with.
Okay. Yes, it was I think it was 2011 or 2013, whatever it was. Anyway, yes, I have a client who, and I will point out, he has unlimited financial resources.
Okay.
So it wasn't the fact that I was trying to get a cheap seat or find a way to get him home at a very cost-saving issue. So basically, he had a meeting in New York, which he had to attend. In fact, I think it had something to do with decorating of the White House, if I'm not mistaken, at the time. So anyway, he was over there. He was a top flyer with one of the carriers, the major carriers. They could not get him out. There was no way to get him home. I suggested a cruise. And we booked him on the QE2 to come from London to New York. It took 5 days, and it cost him a bit of money, but he got home for the meeting. Nobody, I don't think, he hadn't thought of doing a cruise. I did. We brought him on. I made a lot of commission on it, so it worked out very well for me. But
Well, I have to say, it would not occur to me if I was stuck at an airport to take a cruise to get where I'm, you know. Obviously, he had to have the time. He had to have the resources. But it's the kind of, that's the sort of thinking out of the box an airline would not have helped him with.
No, absolutely.
I don't think you can.
No, absolutely not. And so, you know, as I say, we have a lot of resources at our hands that the internet or the interline online booking companies do not have. You know, basically they do a good job if it's a very simple reservation. But what I find, and as an agent, sometimes to get in touch with some of these online booking agencies, it's very difficult to do. It's to get in touch with them.
So as you say, if there's no problems, it works. So. Let me ask you a couple of last questions here in the moment. Some people think, I do it online because I'm getting a cheaper ticket. Is my ticket going to be cheaper if I just do it without an agent?
Well, one, it depends on which online booking company you use. Yeah. There are a number of them that have discount airfares and whatever else. You go in and there's access fare, there's Priceline, else. But if you're working with one of the major online booking agencies like Expedia or Orbitz, and may I point out, both Expedia and Orbitz commission travel agents. So we have no problem with working with them and doing bookings, so which is a good thing. But I actually went in and double-checked some pricing with Expedia and my doing the booking through the GDS. Basically, Expedia had a remarkable, absolutely fantastic bulk booking going to San Francisco in January, air, hotel, car, which was exceptional. Very, very good. But what I found was there were a lot of restrictions to that particular booking. The hotel was non-refundable. The airline was not refundable.
And that's the kind of things
kind of things I can see and I'm going to point out to you.
All right. So the independent travel agency industry, not dead.
Not dead. Not according to all predictions. It's still alive and kicking.
In fairness, if people want to reach you, Wendy, at WLM World Travel, how can they get to you?
I have an 800 number, 1-800-545-8687, or a direct line through into Chicago, Illinois, 773-472-1636.
All right, Wendy Marchant, president of WLM World Travel. Thanks for defending and saving an industry. I appreciate that. It is 12:30 p.m. This is the Wintrust Business Hour. And we are back at 12:35 on the Wintrust Business Hour, the noon hour here, coming to you from the Allstate Showcase Studio at 720 WGN. I'm WGN TV's Paul Lisnick. I'm in for Steve Bertrand today. But if you watch my Politics Tonight show every weeknight or see me on the news programs talking politics, no, we're not talking politics today. We're talking business. This is the Business Hour, and that's what we're going to do. And I want to take a look at the upcoming year. It is the brand new year. And what's ahead in the markets? Certainly it was a good 2017, at least in the world of the markets, as far as most people would say. What are we in for going forward? And since a lot of the folks who listen to this show have an eye towards that, I thought we should address that. Joining me is Sharon Oberlander from Merrill Lynch, where I know you have clients. You deal with over $1 billion of assets under your management. I mean, so you're talking about a lot of people, a lot of money. Although the truth is, Sharon, the discussion we're going to have, it isn't just about rich people, is it?
No, we deal with all kinds of clients, and we deal with their situations one person at a time. So it's very customized, and it's very personalized, and really everyone needs to be concerned about being an investor and learning more about how they should be investing their money.
So 2017, by all accounts, it was a great year. And by the way, I won't be too political, but whether you love Trump, you hate Trump, whatever, I mean, because people sort of look at that, I'll sort of say to you, how much influence does the existence of whether it was President Obama, President Trump, does that really matter as we look at what happens to the economy? Is it a factor in what influences the economy?
I think the policies can matter over time, but I think really the factors that are going on in the economy, whether it's the Fed or whether it's just global growth, which has been very robust. So corporate earnings have been good. And that's really what's driving the market. And when President Obama got elected, you know, he inherited kind of a bad situation. And so it's kind of the luck of the draw what happens as far as the presidents go. But I do think the tax cuts being anticipated and being passed have given the market a boost.
Is it your sense that if they had not gotten their act together, and again, regardless of whether people like or don't like the tax cuts, if they hadn't gotten it passed, might we have seen an impact in the end of the year in the markets?
That's really impossible to tell. It's not predictable. I think we could have seen a blip, but because earnings are good, I think that the market would have recovered from whatever might have happened very quickly.
I also know that markets were good. And again, carrying on political conversations on the television side of my world, Trump supporters say it's him. Look at how the market, you know, rose 700% on one day and whatever, and it's all Trump. And then there's others who will say, but wait a minute, the market's also good all throughout the world. I mean, many, many countries, the market is up.
Yes.
So is it fair enough, again, if you're, I'm not trying to be political with it, but is it fair enough to say it's tough to tie it to any political figure here when we're dealing with an up market around the world?
Yeah, that's very fair to say.
Yeah. And so let's look forward. Mm-hmm. It's been a good year. So here's my fear, all right, because I'm not a business advisor. I rely on my business advisors to tell me what to do. Sometimes when I fear something's going to happen, I want to like sell everything and then just put it in some cash market somewhere, which I don't think really works very well.
No, that's something we should talk about.
Okay, well let's do it. So we've had this bull market. And now, expert Terry Savage was on the show with me last week. She sort of said a good year is ahead. And I know most analysts look at next year. Some have said it's going to be an incredible year like this one. Even the most pessimistic have said it's going to be a decent year. It's going to be good. Nobody's saying get ready for the bear market. Get ready for things to turn around. So do you have a sense of what we're in for in this coming year? And I imagine kind of like Tom Skilling's, you know, forecasts, we can say one thing, but something happens in the atmosphere and it changes instantly.
Well, our chief investment officer, Chris Heise, he feels there's potential for strong gains in 2018, given the favorable economic forecast and the favorable global growth. And also the passage of tax reform is going to give earnings another boost, he believes. So,
what about the people? I'm sorry. I'm going to let you go.
There's some geopolitical event that's unexpected. That's always something that's unpredictable. When markets do get volatile, it's usually something that comes out of left field that's unpredictable. Right now, people worry about Korea. They worry about the Middle East. They worry about those geopolitical events, and they worry about interest rates rising too quickly. They worry about inflation returning. Those are things that could cause volatility or setbacks, but they're not knowable. And all other conditions point to a favorable year ahead.
Now, folks have said expect interest rates to go up next year. It's just bound to Janet Yellen kind of predicted that would happen. Of course,
yes.
She's out. But is it yours? And if interest rates go up, as most people kind of sense they will, I don't know. I think that is a difficult thing for the market. Or is it that analysts like yourself and Merrill Lynch and all these companies, they kind of factor that in to their forecasts?
Yeah, I would say that's very factored in. People have been expecting it for a long time. And the Fed's plan is to increase rates slowly because they have to kind of balance out normalizing rates along with not sabotaging economic growth.
So we can't predict what's going to happen. We have no idea what's going to happen. Although over this weekend, I follow politics very closely, and President Trump's advisors sort of saying, you know, things with North Korea not looking real good. There's sort of a good chance of confrontation there. Do those kinds of factors, you mentioned war, but do those kind of factors start to influence world markets and our markets, the fear of them, or only if something were to happen?
Well, I think the fears, you know, what happens with investors is investors are pursuing their own personal long-term goals. We all have very important things in our lives we're trying to take care of financially. And we can't really get focused on these worldwide global events that happen. And after they happen, markets get unsettled and then they recover. So in the long run, if you react to that as an investor, as you said earlier, it's probably going to hurt you. So you really need to kind of keep your eye on the ball. And I hate to say it, Paul, but you know, the 24/7 news cycle,
yeah,
that is that can become a real problem for investors when when they hear some of these fearful comments and then they hear them repeated again and again and again. What happens is the adrenaline floods their system. And when the adrenaline floods your system, you cannot think rationally. So all you want to do is do something.
So right? Meaning, so if you go back to before the 24-hour news cycle existed, and I know we're going back, more than a couple decades to do that, were the markets potentially less volatile? In other words, because now of the way things are, you really have to keep your eye on it even more closely because there's just so much coming at us on a
moment-to-moment basis. Well, I think there's so much coming at us that you can't really keep your eye on it all the time. You're actually better off as an investor ignoring a lot of it. You're better off keeping your eye on your goals. What am I investing for? I'm investing for my retirement. I'm investing for my kid's wedding. I'm investing for college. I'm investing to buy a new house in 2 or 3 years. And all of those different kinds of investments all belong in different buckets. They all have different risk profiles. You know, retirement could be 30, 40 years away. And so you can go through a lot of volatility and you can look at the history of the capital markets, even though we have that volatility. If you've ever seen that mountain chart, where you how the market has done over years and the declines that were big declines at the time, we look at them and they just look like little blips. So if you can ignore those blips and just be consistent and disciplined about what you're doing, you're going to be far better.
So clearly the advice, as you said right at the beginning of this interview, it's very personalized. Obviously, if somebody comes to you, they're in their 20s, their 30s, not even maybe in their high market or income rates yet in terms of how they're doing. You're going to have different strategies for somebody who is building. They can accept more risk because they can take some downside because historically the market always sort of moves up. If you're looking at retirement, like my WGN colleague Steve Dale, who has to be so well beyond retirement at this point. All right, I've got to get one Steve Dale in every show. I love you, Steve. But anyway, if we're doing that, that's a different set of advice, right? If I'm nearing retirement,
absolutely,
I'm not taking the risk.
Yes, absolutely. I frequently will get novice investors come to me who are kids of clients. They'll want some help. They will have accumulated some money. They're in their first job. The first advice I always give them is to make sure they have a rainy day fund. In other words, they've accumulated $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. They want to start investing. And I say, what you need to do, and this is very old-fashioned advice, but it's excellent advice, is you need 3 to 6 months of living expenses as a rainy day fund. Then you can begin to invest long-term. And once you've accumulated that, then the other thing you need to do is start funding retirement. That's
critical.
Extremely
and people
important.
Who haven't done that, we hear that all the time. People who just aren't funding their retirement, they're buying other things. I want to talk about that. I also want to get sort of your financial resolutions. It is the new year, literally. So I want to get some sense of what people ought to be thinking about if you're a seasoned investor, a novice investor. And we're going to do that with Sharon Oberlander of Merrill Lynch. As soon as we come back, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Hour. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN. And we are back on the Wintrust Business Hour here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, looking out on not a lot of people. It's a little cold out there, just a little bit cold. I'm WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick. I'm in for Steve Bertrand today, and we're talking business because that's what we do in this hour. Sharon Oberlander of Merrill Lynch is with me taking a look at the markets. You know, I brought something up in the last segment, Sharon, that you said we should talk about that, so I want to. Well, I will admit, here's the novice in me. Every time something is starting to happen, the market's starting to drop, or I think it's going to drop, I feel like I want to call the investment advisors and go, sell everything, just sell everything, and put it all in a checking account, and then when it recovers, we'll go reinvest. And I don't think that's probably wise. I never do it. I'm not sure I even can.
It isn't wise. What really makes the most sense is keeping your eye on your own personal goals. And actually, you asked me earlier about New Year's resolutions.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about
New Year's resolution.
Yeah. I think the most important New Year's resolution you can make today is to sit down with yourself or your spouse or your financial advisor and figure out what all your financial goals and priorities are. And some of them may be necessary, like retirement or funding kids' college. Some of them may be nice, meaning it would be nice if I could get a boat. Can I afford a boat? So you have all these different goals, but you have to prioritize them. And the necessary ones have to come before the nice ones. And then what you do is you do the math and you figure out how are you going to, in a disciplined way, attack these goals? How are you going to be able to save the money? What are you going to do? And then you set a strategy and a discipline. And the way you're going to stick to it is if you automate it. And
what do you mean by automate it?
By automate it, I mean take a certain percentage of your income, direct it to retirement automatically. Take a certain percentage of your income, direct it to the college fund automatically. If it's left up to your own devices, you're going to find a reason month after month why you can't do it. So automate it. And if you have a financial advisor, it's really like having a personal trainer. You know, everyone wants to be healthy. They want to be fit. They sign up for the gym membership and then they don't go. But if they have a trainer and they have...
It sounds like you've been following me.
If they have a trainer and they have an appointment, they have someone they are accountable to.
Yeah.
Someone who will keep them on track and someone who will talk them off the ledge when you want to make that call to your advisor to sell everything. Your advisor doesn't let you sell everything, right?
Well, my advisor thinks I'm crazy, which I might be, and I don't do the fitness trainer because I'm too busy eating chips and candy. But let me ask you this. I mean, there are people, a lot of people do their own investments online. There's all sorts of different ways to do it.
Yes.
And, of course, the advertisement behind them is, say, fees, don't pay advisors.
Yep.
And I know you're an advisor, so you have an interest in this. But that being said... I would not want to be my own advisor. I like sitting down with my advisors a couple of times a year as I do and taking a look at things and having them advise me as to what is going on with the markets. What do you think of the auto thing?
Well, I think there's a place for robo-advisors, and I think that for the right people who know themselves and know that they can stick with the program, and the program is automated and it's algorithmic and it will rebalance automatically, and as long as you don't touch it and don't react, it'll be fine. But most people are very emotional, and emotions get in the way of being a good investor. So if you have an advisor, you can sit down and talk with that advisor. Gets to know you. They get to know your risk tolerance. You have to be comfortable to stay the course, and you have to be doing things that make sense to you, and you have to be educated so that you understand what you're doing. Many people are not motivated enough to do that themselves. Like, they like to think they could, and they're, you know, you can be very smart. You can be an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer.
Yeah.
You can be brilliant at this. You can have gone to business school, and you still might be the kind of person who needs an advisor. And I know this because I have people calling me all the time saying, thank you. If it wasn't for you, I never would have had a secure retirement because I made so many mistakes in the past.
So... you're the fitness trainer, right? Yeah. That's kind of the role you fit. Is there
financial fitness.
Yeah. Is there a certain level of income? I always thought if somebody's just starting out, that maybe they don't make a lot of money, maybe they don't have a lot of money. Is that a time, should you talk to an advisor at that point, or do the advisors, is your view of the world, call me back when you're making a certain level or you have a certain amount to invest? And if that's the case, what level is that?
Well, I think there is some of that, and there are different channels. So we have a robo advisor platform called Guided Investing at Merrill Lynch, and it is for smaller investors to be able to put their money into a program that will do all the right things for them at the right time. But that is when life is simple, when you're young and life is simple. But as we go through life, things get more complicated. You get married, you have children, you have other goals, you want to buy a house, you need advice on lending, you need advice on mortgages, you need advice on making sure you're tax efficient. So as your life gets complicated, that's when advice really comes into play. But I think you have to know yourself, and you have to know what it is that you need. And an advisor can be very helpful. Because an advisor gets to know you the way your internist gets to know you, right?
Yeah.
Money is a very intimate subject. And when you sit down with somebody and you open up and you talk about your money, your finances, your family issues, your family values, all of this comes into play. I mean, advisors these days, they get to know their clients so well. I don't want to use this word, but some days I feel like I'm a therapist. So, you know, we have very
I think we're doing that now.
We have very deep relationships with our clients.
Well, let me also ask, is it recommended, like right now I have everything with a financial advisor. There was a time I had sort of a couple or three financial advisors, each one, you know, responsible for different things. And they all sort of said to me, it's not a good thing for you.
Yes.
But that also means if you're going to have one advisor, boy, you really better know what you're doing.
Well, I'm so glad you asked that because I frequently will have people come to see me and they're in their peak earning years. And they have different advisors, they have different investments, they've tried different things over the years. They have such an array of things that are all over the place. I call it baggage. They come to me with their baggage. And what we do is we take a look at everything that they have and we evaluate it and we help them consolidate. They can't get their arms around it. They're in so many places, you can't manage it. So we help them consolidate it and simplify it and understand it and make sure it all makes sense working together. If you were building a house, would you hire three architects to, you know, to build different rooms, or would you have one architect put it all together for you?
But it means you better hire the architect that you truly grow to trust.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, trust is such an important part of this relationship, and it happens over time as both parties get to understand each other. And, you know, people will call me and they'll say, I know you knew I would be calling now because I'm nervous about the market, because it's very predictable sometimes.
You know when we're going to call. In fact, yeah. I was going to ask you that. Is it more important to have an advisor guiding you, assuming you have some level of resources, when things are bad or when things are good?
Well, I think we're most appreciated when things are bad. Because when things are good, the kernel of the idea will enter somebody's mind like, oh, this isn't so difficult. The market went up. I went up. But what's important to know is when you have a well-diversified portfolio, every part of it isn't working at the same time. So an example would be international investing for the last several years wasn't doing very well. And people would say to me, do we need this international stuff? Like, what do we need this for? It's not working. Our U.S. markets are so good. Yes, you need it in order to have a diversified portfolio. What do you think the best performance was in the past couple of years?
International?
Emerging markets, yeah. And international this year. Now, our U.S. market has done well also, but most strategists, our strategists, feel that international represents better value right now.
So I guess as we wrap, your advice as we look ahead to the new year, it's a good year. We're in for a decent year.
Yes, I think we're in for. I think we're in for a decent year. But whether we are in for a decent year or not is not the important thing. The important thing is to keep your eye on your goals and to continue investing toward them, and then you will achieve them. Don't get caught up in this day to day volatility and you know, pronouncements of what might happen, right? Because most of it's unknowable.
Like a tweeter world. Sharon Oberlander with Merrill Lynch. If people want to reach you, how could they do that?
They can reach me at Merrill Lynch at 225 West Wacker in Chicago.
Okay. Sharon Oberlander with Merrill Lynch. Thank you for the advice. I
Thank
sure appreciate
you.
That.